what it is. It's basketball. It's not a f***ing soft sport.
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. A lot to get through on this episode. We were looking at the round that was round 15 and a few other things, but let's jump straight into the news, first of all. If you're on Twitter, most of you, I think, who listen to the podcast are, you would have seen the interaction between Paul Smith, owner of the Sydney Kings, and Felix von Hoff, host of the Sportsbet Trash Talk podcast. Go and like and subscribe their program with Pete Hooley as well. They were both in the conversation. It's a really good podcast. Have a listen. Interesting little back and forth between the two. Paul Smith talking about the Melbourne bias in the media. Felix asserting his position as a representative of Sportsbet and others. You don't want my opinion on it, but definitely go to Twitter and check it out between the two. Interesting little conversation. What I found most interesting is Paul Smith brought up two nice words that I like the use of. Opine, hold and state is one's opinion, and apparatchik, a member of a large political organization, referring particularly to the Communist Party. He used both of those words in his thing. He also brought up MBL, M for Mary, BL, referring that it was the Melbourne Basketball League. And then Hutchie, owner of the Melbourne United, chimed in with the Whoops Capital instead of Hoops Capital tagline, which I thought were all pretty clever. I could see them all across a T-shirt somewhere. I haven't spoken to any of the three, so I really don't have much to comment on. Looking at actual basketball news, Devondrick Walker has been signed by the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix, pseudo replacing Keith Benson, averaging 9 points, a rebound, and an assist in France's top league. Euro stats are hard to get a gauge on. They play a different style. They ask different things of imports. They don't jump off the page, but that's not necessarily a bad thing, not necessarily a good thing either. It puts to bed the question for Southeast Melbourne of whether they're going to go with a big, a like-for-like replacement of Benson, or a wing. They've obviously gone with a smaller wing player, which I quite like. And they're pushing all their chips in on Dane Penaud. True credit to him from absolutely the far end of the Kings bench and behind Ray Turner, who's not in the NBL last year, to major starting minutes, 37 minutes a game sometimes. Incredible. So now the eyes are on how many minutes Penaud and Ty Wesley will see at the five, Wesley that undersized five, to allow Crete to have that advantage at the four. It's going to be a really interesting situation, and how much Magin, Stevens, who else is their wing, how much they kind of get as a group. So a very interesting time for the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix. In other sort of NBL news, Liam Santa Maria's Studs and Duds column is out. Definitely worth a read. And then the NBL Media Award submissions are open. Am I hopeful? Am I confident? No. But let's see what happens. The other thing is the 24-man Boomers squad has been selected. Jump on and have a look at Olgun Ulic as the guy to look at for that one. He was the first one that I saw who had mention of them. Interestingly, the coaches of that team are going to be Will Weaver, Adam Capehorn, and CJ Bruton. And no players from the NBL Finals teams will make the final roster. So I've kind of got on Twitter and put out who I think will make it, excluding the top four teams, Sydney, Perth, Cairns, and Melbourne. They're currently the top four. I know they'll change, but at the minute, what do you want me to do? So I've done that. And a very interesting little thought experiment you can do while you're sitting around the train, twiddling your thumbs. You can think about what team you'd make. But obviously the complexion of that squad and that team changes as the finals teams cement themselves. Let's have a look at round 15. A lot to talk about. First game of the round was Cairns and New Zealand. Cairns winning this one 85-79. Far from a great performance by either team. Offensive rebounding again in the first quarter, an issue for Cairns. I don't have the exact stats, but I think they were down sort of 7-1 or, you know, quite a, again, this is about the second or third game in a row where they've come out and conceded offensive rebounds. I just want to say I'm pushing all in on Brandon Ashley. I'm a big fan. They're better with him on the floor. In this game, he was a +5. They went with Rob Lowe, and that's fine. He was having a career night. He had 20-plus points and a bunch of rebounds. But I think going forward, it's Brandon Ashley. I just like what he does, and they seem to play better on the floor. They're more dynamic with him on the floor. Not having Sec Henry was huge. He's a 14 points per game scorer at 43%, 3.5 assists, 1.5 turnovers. The guys who then took up his minutes were RJ Hampton and Jared Weeks. They combined for 10 points, 4 points less than Henry's average. 4 of 15 from the field, 27%, so almost half the percentage. And then they got a handy 5 assists, but also 3 turnovers. So Henry was just missed in a big way. He had that, I think, calf strain. Dan Shamir in the press, in the little media interview at halftime, referred to his assistant coach as my partner Moody. That made me laugh. Thought it was a funny little phrasing. And perhaps the title of a very good sitcom. If the Breakers are interested, drop me a line. A question I have for you guys out there. You can take to Twitter or just sit there and think about it. It's probably the nicer way to do it. Did we come away with a better or worse feeling about these two clubs? New Zealand, I came away with a better feeling. They looked regimented, organized, but ultimately underhanded. Whereas Cairns, I got a worse impression. They seem undisciplined, random, and less by design. And when you're coming to such tight, the ladder's getting tighter, the gains are getting tighter, it's getting super competitive. I think there's an old rule in show business that safety and security is knowing your lines. I don't think Cairns fully knows its lines yet. They're not as, you look at Perth, you look at Sydney, you look at these teams, they do kind of, the train is on the tracks. The train's not on the tracks in Cairns quite yet. And certainly that's the impression I got from this game. In this game, there were two major statistical diversions from the mean. The first one was Hobson's turnovers. He had 10 of them. Will he ever do that again? It's only been done like 4 times in the last decade. Doubtful. The second is Kansas' three-point percentage. They went 4 of 20, which is well below their season averages, which I don't have on hand. So my question to you again out there is, what was the greater aberration? Which is more likely to happen again? And my answer is, it's very unlikely Hobson will commit 10 turnovers in a game or a number that high. But it does seem to be quite likely that Cairns will struggle to shoot the three-pointer sometimes. They had an amazing hot streak through the season. This game was a bit of a regression. And then Cam Oliver, 0 of 6 from the outside, got to holster it. I like him taking that 2-3 just to bring that defense out to open the lane for him. But 0 of 6, at one point or another, you got to holster it. Keep shooting it, but just there were times when it was the first shot in an early shot clock or he kind of had a better position at it. Anyway. Next game of the round was Illawarra hosting Perth. Perth absolutely creamed them in this one, 77-99. I watched this game only superficially. I was cooking dinner at the time and kind of had it on the background. This was our first look at Miles Plumley. That's the biggest takeaway from the game, having been in the country only a few days. Played 16 minutes. I, like a lot of people, I think, like the look of him. He's super huge, super big guy, and super athletic. So I think he's a nice touch. He certainly just looked on the floor. Just if you, as I was, I was actually keen to watch this game superficially because watching the game just passing by, you could see where it just looked like Perth going up and down the floor with him just looked to have a flow. I know that sounds really sort of artistic or whatever, but it's just the way I came away feeling from it. Sunday Deck did a great job on Bryce Cotton and then came out and Cotton got going. My question is, why wouldn't you match minutes between Sunday and Bryce Cotton? I don't know. I just would have thought you'd basically treat Sunday Deck like a Damian Martin, and when Cotton comes out, Deck comes out. When Cotton comes back in, he should never not have Deck on him. Gleeson and Cotton are peas in a pod. And this is a thought I've gotten. I'm going back to Joey Wright, something he said last season when he said about Bryce Cotton. He plays every possession of every game of every season. And Bryce Cotton is that, most definitely. But also the marriage between him and Trevor Gleeson. Gleeson is that guy too. They were up a bunch in this game and he's still coaching. He's still squeezing the juice out of every opportunity to get better. He coaches every second of every minute of every game of every season. And I really respect both of their approach. So tip of the cap to both of those guys. Next game of the round, Sydney hosted the Cairns Taipans. Kings winning this one, 92-83. The Kings rediscovered their three-point shooting form. Wasn't red hot, but it was 36%, 13 of 36. Ware in particular was great. It was very, I was glad to see Casper Ware shoot well. 4 of 10 from the outside. Jayshon Tate, Daniel Kickert, and Casper Ware were brilliant in this game. In that order, I really feel for the Kings. Tate, he had a plus 23 on the floor. He was absolutely incredible. And then Kickert is having a historically great shooting season. It's a very nice article out by Brad Winter on the pick and roll, I believe, about the 4 or 5 guys over 30 who are having a renaissance season. And in it is Kickert. I haven't read it all, but what I read of it I really liked. So definitely read that one as well. Xavier Cooks. Is he too unselfish attacking the hoop? Too often he was looking to pass. He had 6 points, 3 of 6 in this game. He was getting a foot in the keyway and kicking it out, which is great, but But at times, you know, he's this amazing athletic body. He should be finishing more at the rack. But when he works out the civil and civic responsibilities of this team, when he works out the not the egos, but the his relationship within this team and starts putting up those double-double type nights, trouble. Well, trouble for everyone else, not the Kings. It will be interesting to see if and when Sydney start to crank up Bogut's minutes and involvements heading into the playoffs. He's playing about 20 minutes a game. You would expect he'd play 30. You know, they're better with him on the floor, absolutely. So when do they start pushing his minutes up and his involvement in the offense? He's a huge part of the defense, but involvement in the offense. And how do they maintain Kickett's impact on games? Because he's been incredible too. And he seems to like it best when he is the big guy on the floor without Bogut. Maybe they can play together. I don't know. It'd be interesting to watch. But how they you know control those two dials is something to really watch. So their next game of the round, keep a note on the Kickett Bogut minutes, when they play together and when they don't. Machado had 8 turnovers, and that was the Casper Ware effect. I really felt Casper, he's the best perimeter defender in this league. Third quarter, Cam Oliver got dragged after a subpar effort on defense. Brad Rosen talked about there being a stern chat between he and Coach Kelly during a break or timeout. I've actually got a clip of the audio. Let's have a listen.
Yeah, just listen to the timeout there from Mike Kelly. Very, very animated, and he was not happy at all with Cam Oliver for not listening. He subbed him out of the game. There were some words taken from each other, but he's not going back in at the moment. We'll monitor it.
With Oliver on the bench, Cans went on a run. They were 52-39 when he came out. They were 64-58 when he came back in with about a minute and a half left in the quarter. But they had brought it to within 2 within that time frame. So what were they down? 13 points to bring it back to within 2 points and then back out to 6 with him off the floor. You know, not a great sign for Cam Oliver when something like that happens. Not a huge condemnation either, but also not a good look. This is now the second game in a row that Cam Oliver has not performed up to his lofty standards that we expect of him. He had 14 points, 6 of 21 against New Zealand, and then 8 points, 3 of 7, 3 turnovers in this game, and was not his self off the court. The question I have for everyone is, will he bounce back? I think he will. And I read an article from The Ringer about Oliver and why he was a prospect in the draft that he was going in 2017, I think it is. The article's up on my Twitter. Are the same things that The Ringer wrote about in their article some 2 years ago still continuing to play out in NBL 20? And they basically, the big two I took from that article, amongst others, falling in love with the jumper and non-traditional defense. The idea that he is a better defender from the weak side with the blocks, and we definitely see that in every highlight reel of his. And then the jumper, we saw it this week especially. He fell in love with the long jump shot, and it cost him and the Taipans. So the question then comes, can he play to his strengths for the rest of NBL 20? Can Mike Kelly get him to take a couple of jump shots, but not too many, straighten up his defense, but also be a huge committing help defender? Remains to be seen. There was talk of this being a schedule loss. That could also be the case. They played New Zealand 2 nights before and then had to travel to Sydney down from Cairns. I don't know. I saw more than that, but could definitely be an impact. That was Overtime that spoke about it being a schedule loss. Corey Holmes, Lim San Maria. Next game of the round. Adelaide hosted Melbourne 100-86. Adelaide taking this one in a bit of a shocker. I know they were at home and they're a good side, but I think I tipped Melbourne to win this game, amongst others. So Melbourne, the big talking point here, so strap yourselves in, everyone. First and foremost, no undershirt for Harry Froehlich. Played better. Looked more sprightly without it, so that's number one. Melbourne had 13 turnovers to halftime. How is a team like this committing? We had a glut of turnovers this round from certain people. How did they have 13 turnovers to halftime at this point in the season? I was a bit shocked by that. But their first quarter was good. They played really good in the first quarter. It was just thereafter. I felt like Adelaide were getting a favourable whistle. And I'm not making excuses for United at all, but here are the stats. Personal fouls, 19-24. Melbourne with 24. And then free throws. Adelaide had 35 free throw attempts. Melbourne had 23. So they had 12 extra foul shots, of which they made most of them. Melbourne lost by 14, so you see there, and it's like, okay. But also Adelaide got to the line because they were just amazing. They played really well. They attacked the basket. They shot well. They defended really well. I'm not taking anything away from them at all. Sean Long was temperamental with Vickerman at one point in this game. I think it was sort of second or third quarter. I can't recall, but there was a time when they were chatting on the bench and hands were going everywhere and a bit of a throw up. Whether it was just a heated conversation or more, I don't know. Anthony Drimmick with what I thought was the move of the year. I absolutely loved it. Came off a screen from Eric Griffin, sort of did a little shimmy, mini Georgetown gallop, showed it to Sean Long, half spin, fadeaway jump shot over a hand. It was beautiful. Again, I've clipped it on my Twitter if you want to take a look at it. We were talking about fouls before. Really bad foul call on Chris Golding boxing out Anthony Drimmick. I think Melbourne were down maybe 5 or 7 points at that time, and it was a real critical call. I think it may have even resulted in free throws the other end. Just totally took the momentum out of the game, but certainly out of United. Melbourne's locker room issues. Let's have a chat about this. Is there a split on local and import lines? Is there a lack of connections? Is the one that Liam Santamaria wrote about in Studs and Duds. Is it on and off the floor? Are more rounds of team building mini golf the answer? Like, I haven't quite understood what the problem is, if there is one. Is it a we can't play together? Because I don't have a huge problem with a locker room being combative but professional. And I just don't think that this is a, like, oh, we hate playing with each other. I really don't see that. I saw them in the first quarter. I see they play well. The problem is not personnel. The problem's structure and the way they're playing. They've got to play freer, but they've got to play better defense. They conceded 100 points to Adelaide, which a lot of teams do, but it's still above their average of 96, I think it was. So they've got to find a way to play defense. But, I mean, Joey Wright, looking at the team opposite them who played so well, Joey Wright was saying, you know, we were too buddy-buddy when they lost to, I think, Illawarra at home. We were too buddy-buddy. Well, are Melbourne too buddy-buddy or not buddy-buddy enough? Or where do you find the line? I'd rather not be buddy-buddy, but win games. And they're just in a slump. I mean, but also let's have a good look at Melbourne and their, you know, slump and how bad they are and how we need to lump criticism on them or what have you. The only non-contending teams that Melbourne have lost to are the New Zealand Breakers in round one and the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix by 3 points in round three. They're the only two, but not in the four, not within Adelaide, Brisbane. You know, they're the two teams that I don't think they're going to make the finals, unfortunately, for both of them. They've beaten Perth in Perth and Sydney at home in Melbourne. Sydney have not beaten Perth in Perth yet. They play them in a round or two, I think. They're 3-3 in their last six games. Who have they lost to? Cairns by 2 points, who everyone agrees is a really good team. Brisbane Bullets, who are surging, and Adelaide, who are a good team and surging as well. The criticism comes where you think this Melbourne team should be a one or two top team, and to be honest, that's pretty fair. That's where I kind of had them slated. Hasn't quite worked out, but they haven't, you know, they haven't lost to Illawarra at home like the Sydney Kings have. So, you know, where does kind of whatever, and you know, the bookies had them high, I think, title favourites, but then the bookies aren't sitting there as the number one delegator of talent and ambition and expectation. The bookies are there trying to place odds to get people to bet and hopefully lose. So while they are a gauge of where the sort of league is looking, it's not their prerogative to know exactly, to measure expectations. So when people say, oh, the bookies have, that's not really the point. It is a point, but not wholly and solely the conversation. Anyway, Mello Trimble. Let's have a look at him. 2 of 13 in this one. He's averaging 7.3 points per game on 21% shooting in his last three games. He's in a slump. So this is what I'm going to throw out to everyone there if you're listening. What do we think of Mello Trimble? Is he good? I happen to think Mello Trimble's really, really good. I think he's fantastic. I think he can shoot, he can score, he can play. He's tough at the hoop. He's a point guard who gets in the seams, makes things happen. Has he played poorly the last three games? Oh, yeah. Yes, he has. But I feel like a lot of the dislike of Mello Trimble is aimed at him because he's a young player under Emmett Nahr's age, just for example, not to put the two against each other. He's a young American point guard who scores. And the narrative around that in modern basketball now is that equates to selfish. Scoring point guards equate to selfish. Russell Westbrook and others. I don't see it that way. I think he's fallen into that archetype and people have run with it. He's in a slump. The moment he comes out of a slump, what will we say then? I'm really hoping this Melbourne team turns it around. They've got a lot of talent and I don't know what the secret is. They've got to play better defense. Or either play better defense or go the other way and just go, we're just going to run. You score 2 points, that's great. We're going to score three in 2 seconds later. I don't know what it is. Very interesting to watch, though. The thing I'd throw out to you is, what is their best defensive lineup, United? Can they go with like a Trimble, McCarron, Illy, Sean Long and Golding line? I don't know. I don't know. I haven't spent any time with it, but something to think about. Next game of the round. The New Zealand Breakers hosted the Brisbane Bullets, and Brisbane won this one 85-95. Really good game from them. The Bullets, I mean. It just looked to me that physical and mental fatigue looked to be impacting the New Zealand Breakers. Henry had come back from injury and looked quite good in the second half. And that mental and physical fatigue, born of their schedule of late, but also born of the ladder pressure they're under, they just needed to string off like eight wins in a row, and you could see them they just couldn't quite rise to the occasion because they'd spent so much in all those close and tight and hard-fought wins of the last couple of rounds. Here's a little passage of play I want to talk to, and if I could clip up highlights, this is the one I would have clipped up. Brisbane were down 18-7 late in the first quarter, 18-7. Braun and Singler stacked on 8 points in a hurry to bring the lead to a manageable 18-15 to end the first quarter. I think Braun hit three, Singler hit three, and Braun got a layup, I think, or a dunk or a foul shot. Anyway, they poured in these 8 points, and that's what I've liked about Taylor Braun from the beginning. I don't think he's in his best situation in Brisbane, but I do think he's a good player. He's got great timing. He's got great poise. He does not make mistakes. I think in a different situation where he had a higher volume, things would be different. And where the system wasn't so, and this is to the credit of the Bullets and the Marlins, the system that is so team first and equal opportunity that Braun can sometimes, he's not that step forward guy by all appearances. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't, but by all appearances, he's not that real, big locker room presence. He seems to be a guy who's very much team first and is happy to take the hit, and I think he's a good player. Braun and Singler combined for 27 points, 78.5%, 11 rebounds in this game. Like that from two imports. That's pretty good. There was a huge run in the third quarter orchestrated by the Breakers, and it was Henry, Delaney, and Hobson that got this game back to within one. It was 56-57 at that time. And then I clicked into gear. I thought, okay, what's going to happen? The game's right on the line. Which two players are going to step up for Brisbane or the Breakers and break this one open? Sure enough, Lamar Patterson hits two. Next possession, they get a stop. Taylor Braun hits three. Lead goes back out to six. Ship steadied, and they rolled behind Cam Glidden's hot shooting in the fourth to take out the win. But those two names come up again. Lamar Patterson, Taylor Braun. Hampton. Let's talk about RJ Hampton in this one. Hugh Bennion, courtside, saying there has been friction, and I'm paraphrasing, there has been friction between the Hampton camp and the Breakers over court time and role. Came sometime in the sort of third or fourth quarter, I'm not too sure. Hampton in this one, 12 minutes, 4 points, 2 of 6, 0 of 3 from the outside, 2 turnovers. Had some amazing flashes of talent, both physical and technical. I mean, he had sort of like a flush dunk over Magnay or Hodgson, can't remember. Looked incredible. Some bursts of speed that were incredible, but piecing it all together in a tight game when you're trying to win, a bit tougher for the young men. Did take a step back three-pointer in the corner. In the timeout, Dan Shamir, paraphrasing again, says, the step back three in the corner, that's a 0 of 800 percentage shot. to Shamir's credit, though, left Hampton in the game. So Shamir is not a... He's not the worst person in the world, but Hampton's minutes have come down. Let's look at Hampton's minutes before and after the injury. So before the injury, he was averaging about 25 minutes per game, give or take. Since the injury, about 14 and a half, and it's only been a couple of games, three, I believe. That's what happens when a guy goes out. They play well, they win, they've got a structure they like, and whether Hampton deserves to be in that lineup because he's got the talent or not is kind of irrelevant. They've got, the train is on the tracks. It's hard to jump on the train when it's on the tracks and moving. You know, he got injured and kind of the train left the station a little bit, but maybe he can still plug in and give something. And I hope he can stay mentally focused to work on what he needs to for these teams and in these games. We talked about the Breakers being physically and mentally fatigued, and it showed up in these major statistical categories. Three-point percentage, New Zealand shot 12 of 35. Rebounds, they got out-rebounded 31 to 43. Points in the paint was the big one, but this wasn't so much as a mental or physical attrition on behalf of the Breakers. It was more a result of Will Magne and Hodgson. Magne in particular, like, guys are terrified of going near him, and he chases everything. He takes no playoff. A sure dunk is coming in the keyway. He's still going to contest. Incredible. They beat him points in the paint. 34 for the Breakers, 54 for the Bullets, plus 20 in the paint. That's ownership. Bench points, 19 from the Breakers, 35 from the Bullets. It just flowed for the Bullets in this game, and they look good, and they're a real contender to make the top four. I haven't gone into breaking down the schedules for the rest of those teams. They did such a good job of it on overtime, and I clipped a poster of what they put up on that show, and I've got it on my Twitter account at NBL Pocket Pod. You're as smart as anyone out there. You take a look at it and you work out who's going to finish in the top four. No one really knows. Last game of the round, Illawarra hosted Southeast Melbourne. Southeast Melbourne winning this one 82-90. I throw my hands up. I didn't watch it. Okay, I watched the highlights and I looked at the box score. I didn't watch it. Life's too short. So I'll give you the kind of funky stats, and I kind of like to do this sometimes, not watch a game and look at the stats and see if the stats tell the story of the game, and it's a bit of a thought exercise. So here we go. First thing that jumped out to me, the Illawarra starters combined for 41 points, 14 of 48 from the field, that's 29% in 107 minutes. The Illawarra bench, on the other hand, combined for 41 points, 15 of 30 shooting, 50%, in 93 minutes. So the same amount of points at a much better percentage, almost double, in less minutes. What's this team's best rotation? Like, there's been a lot of talk of Darrington, Hobson. I don't know. Anyway, I've talked about this rotation of this team from round one. I'm not going to do it anymore. I've had enough. In a game where Creek and Wesley combined for 13 points, 5 of 22 from the field, 23%, only 6 rebounds and 10 turnovers, and the Hawks lose by 8 points, giving up 29 points in the second quarter, having been up 8 at the end of the first quarter. Whew. Boy, that hurts. Terry Armstrong had a tough one and sort of capped off a pretty tough week for all the next stars, and if we just quickly diverge and go through them. LaMelo Ball, out injured. RJ Hampton, I wouldn't say struggling in New Zealand, but just sort of in a malaise. Didi, not in the starting lineup anymore. Not getting those big minutes. Not struggling, but again, just going back to or sitting in the area that we thought these next stars would. Terry Armstrong, saw some time, which is an improvement for him, but didn't have a huge impact again. Am I missing any other next stars? Nope. But Terry Armstrong, the next stars could be a little bit of a smudge on the telescope. Kendall Stevens was the feel-good story of round 15. Had been sort of out of play for the last 6 or 7 rounds, and then all of a sudden shot up with this game when they really needed it. Dane Pinot and Kendall Stevens carried them to this win. 31 minutes, 20 points, 58% from the field, 6 of 11 from the three-point line, that's over 50%. But most importantly, and this is a stat that I noticed when I was looking at free throws of big men, no free throw attempts. The streak is alive. He's going to make it to the end of the year, trust me. Now with their new wing import coming in, he's going to see less time, and I don't think he's going to get a free throw up. Imagine that, a whole season without a free throw. Kendall, don't attack the hoop. They were all the game's rounds. Great round. I'm going to be doing a second show this week, or at least I hope to, that's going to talk more about tips and things. I want to keep these episodes short. I don't want to go for much longer. So I will just quickly say that the round 16 games coming up, I think it's round 16, the games coming up are on Friday, we've got New Zealand hosting Sydney. and Perth hosting South East Melbourne. Saturday, we've got Brisbane hosting Illawarra and Cairns hosting Adelaide. And then on the Sunday, we've got the Breakers hosting Melbourne, Sydney versus hosting South East Melbourne. To me, the biggest games of the round are Cairns and Adelaide on Sunday. Put that in your calendar. I don't know what time it is, but that's a big one. Oh my. Those guys are competing for third and fourth. Each have the chance to steal a win off the other. Oh my. Big. And then, New Zealand. Melbourne might be fun on the Sunday. Like, we're about to see. If you think the Melbourne United are in a struggle streak now, whew, imagine if they lost that one. Gosh, and bother. And then Sydney, South East Melbourne. They've been a bit of a crux for Sydney, South East Melbourne a little bit. So, and especially with a new import in his second game on the second of a back-to-back. Could be fun. I want to end on one last little thing, a talking point. Who's going to finish top? The debate on third and fourth is too wide-ranging. It's too much. I don't know where to even begin. We'll break that down in a couple of rounds. But what we can look at is top spot. And I meant to check this out of the amount of times the number one seed has won the championship in the NBL. I'm going to go ahead and say it's probably a lot. So who's going to finish top? Sydney currently sit there with a record of 15-6. Perth the second, 14-8. Let's have a look at their schedules the rest of the way. And I find this funny that a lot of people are looking at who's going to finish 3-4. To me, the biggest question is who's going to finish 1-2. But anywho, Sydney's schedule. They have back-to-back rounds. Perth don't have any back-to-back. Oh, yes, they do. They have. So Sydney have two back-to-back rounds. Perth have only one. So Sydney at New Zealand Breakers, and then two days later, at home, South East Melbourne. Next round. At Illawarra, and then 2 days later, against Melbourne in Sydney. Then they play at Perth, at South East Melbourne, and at home against Illawarra. I look at them and I say they're probably going to go, they've got three home games, four away games. They're probably going to go 5-2. And that's, I've got them beating Melbourne at home, and I've got them losing to Perth and at South East Melbourne. Before we talk about the big games and the percentages, well, percentages, let's look at. Sydney have a percentage of 0.714, Perth 0.636. So Perth need to get a game over Sydney. If it's a tie, Sydney have got the top spot, which totally changes the complexion of this conversation. Perth's schedule. Five home games, one away game. They host South East Melbourne and New Zealand. Then in this particular round, they are at Melbourne, and then 2 days later they play Sydney at home. Big game. Second of a back-to-back, they are at home, but it is Sydney. And then they play Brisbane and Adelaide. So five at home, one away. I think they're probably going to go 5-1. The only game they're going to drop is against Melbourne in Melbourne. But even then, I'm not so sure about that. They could very easily lose the thing. But I think they're going to lose one game, whether it's Melbourne, whether it's Sydney, whether it's an upset somewhere. I think they're going to win their home games. 5-1. So if Sydney go 5-2 rest of the way and Melbourne go 5-1 the rest of the way, Sydney are going to come out on top with a record of 20 wins, 8 losses. Perth, 19 wins, 9 losses. So you really look at it, how do Perth steal the top spot, or how does Sydney concede it? The big games for Sydney, so they have to drop how many? Four games the rest of the way to concede to Perth. Is that right? That would take them to 3-4. No. Yeah, shit. But anyway, they got to drop these games. And because at the minute, if they go, if things go as they're planned, Sydney have got the top spot. They've got to lose two extra games. So I've got them losing to Perth and South East Melbourne. So they've also got to lose to the next two likely ones they could lose at, which is hosting South East Melbourne and hosting Melbourne. I don't think it's going to happen. So I think Sydney are going to get the top spot. With top spot, can they win the title? 95% of the time, or 93% of the time, the home team in the NBL wins. Perth, Sydney with the top spot. Very, very interesting. Guys, that's all I have for you this week. Thanks for listening. If you're on Apple iTunes, click the stars and give a rating, good or bad. I read them all. Not as they have them, but I kind of get to them. And if you write something funny or interesting, I'll definitely mention it on the program. Thanks very much, everyone, and I will see you in the near future.